Hey listeners, I'm Karen Riley Jeffers, NCSM's Eastern 2 Director. Welcome to our series, Learning with Leaders, Everyone Belongs in Mathematics. Thank you for joining me and my co-host, Abel Maestas, the host of Teaching That Counts, as we talk with both leaders and influencers about their math journeys and contributions. Today, we will hear from our special guests about their inspiration, perceptions, and insights regarding instructional decisions that make the mathematics space welcoming and engaging to all. Listen and learn about how beliefs, practices, and policies must continue to advance to ensure that each and every person feels a sense of belonging in mathematics.
All right, thanks for being here at our Learning with Leaders podcast, NCSM. This is the first podcast with myself, Abel Maestas, and Karen Riley Jeffers. And I can't think of a better guest to have for our very first podcast to launch us in our series, Everyone Belongs in Mathematics, than our friend, Crystal Watson.
Yes.
And hello. Yes.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much.
So just a little bit about Crystal. Crystal is a passionate mathematics educator from Cincinnati, currently serving as an elementary school principal. She is dedicated to helping to cultivate spaces of belonging where deep learning and positive growth can happen. Her motto being, "What do students think?" reminds her to always take time to hear different perspectives, especially the children, in order to make sound decisions. Again, thank you for being here, Crystal. It's just awesome to have a friend like you on our podcast.
Yeah, glad to be here with you all.
So thank you again. You know, when this first came about, you were one of the first people I texted, and I was like, hey, what do you think about this? And your response was, I can never get enough about belonging. Like, there's just never enough about belonging, and we can talk about
never.
It more. And I appreciate that, even though we don't talk often, that you're like the person I can like text and you'll respond. You're like, I got you, sis.
Absolutely. Anytime.
But before we begin, I know Abel just introduced you, but if you will share some of your journey in education that has led you to your current work.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a career changer. So I spent some time in corporate America doing things that I didn't really care about, but that made me money, right? And there was one time where I was like, you know what? I don't care about what I'm doing in work, and it's making me depressed. So what do I want to do next? Because I can't live my life like this, right? And I was like, oh, I want to teach. So I joined Teach for America. I know, surprise, surprise, all of us don't suck like everybody thinks. Teach for America, Cincinnati, I was placed in a seventh and eighth grade mathematics classroom in a K-8 building after telling the then mathematics manager, Emily Campbell, that I want to teach anything but math. And she was like, oh, that sounds like you'd be a great math teacher. And I was like, you're crazy. But she really pushed me, and she was like, try it. I promise you, we got you. And I was like, okay, well, I feel like this is a calling for me, so let's go. I spent years in the classroom getting all the learning that I could from anybody that wanted to offer it. And then I was offered a fellowship at Columbia through TFA and CPS. And the fellowship was to get my second master's in educational leadership and my principal licensure. But the caveat was that I have to be in a leadership role within CPS for 4 years, directly leaving that fellowship. So I had to choose, like, what do I want to do next? And I was like, you know what? I haven't been in the classroom as long as I would have wanted to be, but I have a good foundation. So how about I coach teachers? And I had an option. I could have been an assistant principal, or I could have went to coaching. And I was like, you know what? I want to coach. I want to learn how to build meaningful relationships with teachers and help them see their own potential and to grow, and honestly just love on them at that point, because it was right after COVID. And I want to do that non-evaluatively first, just to kind of sharpen my saw. So I did that for a couple years. And then finally, I was like, you know what? I'm ready to jump. I'm ready to leap. I want to be an assistant principal. And anybody in my district will tell you, like, I'm not one to just be like, put me wherever you want. I had a set of requirements, like the building that you put me in, I have to be with a strong leader. I need to be in, you know, such and such and such and such. So I was placed at Reezy Price Academy, where kindness is the culture, with Tiffany Mayer. And one of the best years that I've had, learned a lot, built lots of relationships. And then this year got called upon to take on the principal role. So that's kind of where I ended up where I am.
That's awesome.
Awesome. Yeah, I love all those movements from one to the next to the next to the next. It's
yeah.
So many experiences that have led you to that. Yeah. So our theme for this this series is everyone belongs in mathematics. So you get to be the first one to answer our lead-off question. And that is, what does it mean to belong in mathematics?
Oh my gosh, y'all, this is like, so y'all know that I do a bunch of conferences and conference appearances. And yeah. I had a little bit of anxiety about conference presentations at first, because I was like, you know what? I'm not talking about fluency and, you know, mathematics content. I'm really talking about like the crux of like the human being, right? Like, what does it mean to be a human being and experience math within a classroom, within a school system? And that's kind of been my niche ever since, right? And belonging has always been at the center of what I'm talking about. I've always talked about voice, student agency, and really belonging is at the middle of that, right? At the center of that. And to me, it means that there's a deeper, more personal interest in not getting the right answers. And don't troll me, Fox News. Right answers matter at one point. But it means that we have a personal interest in not getting those right answers right away, but in the process of like learning and using math in ways that make sense for us, right? It means that all thinking and approaches, right? So even the kids that just draw a picture or sit and think with nothing on the paper, all of it is valuable and all of it is welcomed, right? As a non-negotiable part of teaching and learning math. It means to be able to see connections to our own lives and our own experiences, right? And nobody can tell us what that means except for when we ask that one person. So if I ask, I'm just going to call out some of my old students. If I ask Lantez what belonging in mathematics is, he's going to tell me one thing. And then I ask Nyla, she's going to tell me another thing. And I ask Talia, and she tells me another thing. So the crux of understanding belonging in mathematics is actually asking the students that are in front of you, because it's going to change from bell to bell, year to year, student to student.
That's amazing, because it makes me think, like, if you make a habit of doing something like that, then it's almost like you're creating your own portfolio of what it means to help students belong in so many different ways, because someone is going to bring something different to add to your repertoire to help increase how you help others belong in the classroom.
Absolutely.
I absolutely love that. So we love following you on social media.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some time ago, you wrote, young people don't hate math. Uh-huh. They hate feeling like it's outside their possibilities. How do you build a community of welcomed confusion? Can you talk about that some more and help us answer that question?
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of people usually refer to this as mistake making, but I feel like it's a little deeper than that. So for me, it's about making sure that there are clear and intentional ways that students can say, I don't know, or I just don't get it, or even show non-verbally through their body language or putting their head down, and they're not met with disappointment or judgment or the long sighs and eye rolls or the body language that tells them that they're getting on your nerves, right? But rather in a way to welcome their questioning, help them find an entry point, right? So if you've got your head down, there's a reason for that. And even when you're tired, if you're engaged in something, think about the last time you were, today, I was really tired, but I was so engaged in the learning because it was engaging to me, right? It spoke to what I wanted to sharpen my saw about. So there's ways to find them entry points, right? I think back to a student that was in an eighth grade classroom and really, really struggled with just basic multiplication facts. And I try to tell people, like, stop doing time tests, stop it. And stop trying to get kids to memorize their multiplication facts past fourth grade. Give them ways to multiply without memorization. There's so many ways. Give them a hundreds chart. Show them the patterns within the hundreds chart. Give them, show them arrays. Show them, area models. Like, all of these different things, right? This child loved added addition. I mean, repeated addition. Eighth grade. So we were multiplying like two digit by three digit or something. He literally took that three digit number and we had the dry erase markers on the desk. And I said, go ahead, baby. We got nothing but time for you to learn what you need to learn. So go ahead and do that repeated addition. He did it. His whole desk was filled up. And then I came back and I said, what do you notice about this? Let's say that he was multiplying by, he had to multiply this by 30. How many times do you see this number? Oh, he counted 30. Oh, so I added it 30 times to each other. And that's the same as this number times 30. It was like mind blowing to him. And I've seen teachers give up to be like, he only knows addition. Stepping stone addition gives you to multiplication. Right. Like, I was excited for him. And the other students were like, yeah, you got this, boy. You got this, And it was just like, nobody was like, oh, you're so dumb, and stuff like that. Like, they were like hyping him up. Like, you got this, keep going. Look at all that writing he got, and it was beautiful. And so you have that entry point, but you also give space to where the class can grapple with a question together, right? So like when I had problems on the board or something, my kids could always phone a friend, always. And I'd say, your friend can't tell you the answer, but they can help you get to the answer by putting your thoughts together. And so just opening those things up, right? And then there's positive affirmations for showing up for themselves and their learning, not for doing what I want them to do, but positive affirmations like, hey, you showed up and showed out. And my students knew that phrase a lot. I'd be like, show up and show out. You showed up and showed out for yourself. Like, it's not about me. It's about what you're doing for your own learning and for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's that speaks to how you mentioned the agency, yeah. Right? And owning the math. And I think that's so powerful when students can own their own math and that the teacher allows them to be thinkers and solvers and then own the math and then see themselves in the mathematics. I think that's such a hugely powerful piece for students in taking ownership of the mathematics and then being able to see themselves as math people. I really think that
for sure. For sure.
Important. We've noticed that sometimes teachers, especially in the elementary level, right? Secondary level, sometimes a teacher see themselves as math experts, not as fearful as in the math, but elementary teachers don't often feel that way. We've asked elementary teachers how they felt about mathematics, and we often get negative views of mathematics from our elementary school teachers. So I'm wondering, in your current role as an administrator, how do you help students and teachers feel a sense of belonging in mathematics?
So affirmations are my love language. And then also folks asking, can I see that? Can you show me? That's another way that like pumps me up, right? I don't want you to ask me to tell you. I want you to say, can you show me that? Because I'll be like, absolutely. Give me a group, give me a classroom, and let's do it. Because I'm going to make mistakes. I don't know your kids like you do, but I want you to see that, right? So I feel welcome when I hear affirmations. And I love to hear teachers turn those affirmations to affirm themselves, right? Like, I got this. I can do this. Because they believe in the power of their own growth, right? Because somebody believed in them at one point or another. But I want to affirm what you're saying about elementary teachers being shy about mathematics because there is a heavy emphasis on literacy, and we know that, right? So when you're going in to lead an elementary building, I think that that's something that you just have to know. In my current role, in my current building, I have two really strong math K and one teachers. That is their jam. They love math, which is unheard of, right? Usually it's like, well, I only teach math half of the time because, yeah, we need to learn how to read. And I'm like, well, I don't know if it's we need to learn how to read or you're not comfortable with it, right? It could be a mix of both. But for me as an assistant principal, especially, it meant modeling, right? So modeling safety for my teachers. My teachers were okay and safe to make mistakes. Giving them space to see themselves and others to see them, and making sure that I found ways to show them that they were valued where they were, right? So I'm thinking of one of my second grade teachers from last year. She is an amazing, amazing teacher. And one of the things that she wanted to grow in was her math instruction. So she was like, can you come do a model lesson? We're doing regrouping. Subtraction with regrouping. And I'm not really comfortable with manipulatives either. That's what she said to me. So I came in, we did a lesson together. We had manipulatives out. I showed her how to use, you know, her base 10 blocks for it, showed the kids how to do the regrouping pieces. Of course they wanted to build houses and things. And we did that at the end, but those types of things are what help us help our teachers believe in their own growth. And I'm going to bring in Adrienne Marie Brown, right? Have you guys read Emergent Strategies?
Not yet.
So Adrienne Marie Brown talks about fractals, right? And we all know what fractals are because we're math people, but it's a repeated pattern, right? And the pattern can either look very small because it starts with small, and then it gets bigger, 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 bigger. And it occurs naturally in nature. So the way that we are as people and our learning and all of that mimics nature, right? And she says, small is all. Small is all. Because each piece of us makes the bigger picture, right? So whatever small thing that we can do in order to affect the big, that's what I want my teachers to understand. Like, you don't have to be perfect the next day. You just do small things, right? Because we are as nature is. We're fractals.
I love we are fractals.
We are fractals. Yes, we are.
Yes, we are. It just makes me think about what we want to see in our students too, because we want our students to feel comfortable enough to make mistakes. We want them to be risk takers. And I really appreciate the fact that you're willing to place yourself in the classroom, in like getting in the ring with the teacher, you know, so that you're working side by side in partnership so that they feel comfortable to contribute to their belonging. So, I mean, you're letting them know that that you care, you love them, you're about the work, you're there for them.
Absolutely.
That's great. So how can leaders support teachers in creating equitable learning spaces to increase belonging? So like, in addition to everything you said, like what else can leaders do?
So I have a list of things. I have a list of three quick things, actually, but I want to start off before I even talk about those three things. I want to say that we as leaders have to give our teachers space to get to know themselves first, right? Because we don't allow enough reflection time in education because everything is emergent, right? Everything is an emergency. It needs to be done right now or we're failing kids, right? So, like, we don't have enough reflection time. We've got to give teachers some time to really get to know themselves in the content, right? So some teachers don't even know whether they're really good at the content or really bad at the content because they haven't had a chance to really dive in the way that they need to. But also giving them a chance to understand where their positionality within the classroom, right? So understanding how might I be showing up? And how does that affect my practice, right? So if I have a belief that students that test their first benchmark of the year off grade level, cannot access on grade level work, that is going to affect my level of expectation for those children, right? So I'm going to give them off grade level work. I'm going to feel like they can't do it. I'm going to give them low rigor. And that doesn't help anyone, right? So I think that's the first thing we have to do as leaders is to check those things, right? Check those biases and give space to really learn and grow in that way. But the three things that I would say, one is professional development and personal development, right? And I'm not talking about just a PD that you can check off the box or a PD that teachers want to multitask through because it's not effective. I'm talking really spending time and money, and it does take money to have PD, time and money in meaningful ways so that teachers can have good PD, meaningful PD, PD that can sustain. Space to make errors and receive immediate feedback and meaningful feedback. So giving them the time, the space to make errors, to say, I don't know, right? Because I can't even tell you how many times I said, I don't know. And Sal Khan got me together because I would go right to Khan Academy and be like, okay, I don't know this. Let me watch a video, listen to Sal for a little bit, practice before I got in front of my kids, right? The last thing that I would say is support to grow, right? So whatever that support looks like, because it looks like different things for different people. Some people want to be coached in the moment. So come in, watch me teach. That was me. I wanted you to come in, watch me teach, and just tell me things right away. Like, okay, this could have been better right here. There's some folks that just want to write up afterwards, right? To say what I saw. Some folks want a face-to-face conversation. Some folks want me to come in and give them more time outside of the classroom to be able to plan and sharpen their saw. So support looks different. And then just rinse and repeat those three things.
Oh yeah. it's funny you mentioned those. Sorry that you, it's funny you mentioned those three things. Those are really the three things that I feel as a coach myself, those are the things that bring me joy when I'm working with teachers.
Yes.
Is giving them time for good professional development on what they want in their yes. profession, yes. How they want to see their growth, giving them some space to make those, and then supporting them in ways that I can. That makes me feel good as a coach, working with teachers to be able to do that. So I love that. So that being said, you gave three really good things. Yes. Is there any last, like, one tip? And this is our last question for all of our guests, and you get to be the very first person to answer our last question.
Let's go.
So you are the very first person to answer our first question and our last question. So the last question is, can you give one tip that leaders can do right now to support a sense of belonging in mathematics?
Get started. Like, get just started. Start, right? Just start. Start wherever you are. If you need to learn about it, start your learning. If you know a little bit and need to sharpen the saw, sharpen it. If you are a person that knew how to do it, then find someone to teach, right? So just get started, make connections to each and every teacher so that they can make connections with each and every student, right? So maybe, and I'm not saying you got to do everybody every day, right? I'm talking small bites. This week, I'm going to focus on these two people. These are the two people I'm going to build deep connections with. I'm going to make sure that they are connected to what we're doing in our staff meeting or our data meeting or whatever, so that you're modeling that, so that when the teachers go back to class, they're like, oh, well, Watson connected me and such to data meetings this week. Oh, let me pick a couple kids to connect to the lesson this week. And then once you start to do that, you're going to want to do it even more because the kids are hype. Y'all know kids get excited to see their name, even in a word problem. And that's the most basic of the basic. So just get started. You can do it wherever you are. Get started where you are.
I love that. A few of the things that I learned from you today, just listening to you and having this conversation, is like, really connected to belonging is reflection in our own self-reflection and the intentionality behind how we're positioning the people that we're working with and how we're supporting our staff and how we're supporting our students. So I thank you for the gold nuggets that you dropped on us for our first episode. And thank you for joining us today. But before we leave, we'd like our listeners to know where they can learn more about you. So where can they hear about you and your work?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm pretty, most of the time, I'm pretty active on Twitter. I'm kind of shadow banned right now because of the debate, y'all. Elon did not like my tweets, but it's
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm pretty active on Twitter. It's Twitter until the wheels fall off.
Right.
But please feel free, reach out to me via email. Let's have a cup of coffee over Zoom or whatever, wherever you are. My Twitter is underscore Crystal M Watson. My email is watsoncrystalm@gmail. And you can visit my website at crystalmwatson.com. Any of those ways to get to know a little bit more about me and or interact. I welcome it all. I'm still learning. Nobody ever arrives until we do.
That's right. All right. Thank you so much again for joining us today. We really appreciate your time.
Of course. Anytime. I would never say no to y'all. What do you mean?
That might be why you were Karen's first text message.
She knows who's got her.
We love
I love you
you. We
back.
got you too.
I know it.
We hope that you have been inspired by this bold mathematics leadership conversation and will tune in to our podcast series each month. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. You can learn more about NCSM leadership and mathematics education and our upcoming professional learning events on the NCSM website, mathedleadership.com. You can also follow NCSM on the X at mathedleaders and using the hashtag NCSMBold. Until next time.